Sees a young couple discovering shared childhood experiences which have defined every aspect of their lives, not least their relationship to the city which they once called home. Cypress Avenue by Lucy Caldwell.
December has always been hard, but this year will be the hardest December yet. You will feel yourself struggling to shoulder the weight of it, will want more keenly than ever to shrug it off, just this once, just for 1 year. And you'll find yourself saying on the phone to your mum, "I might not actually be able to get home." The last word will stick in your throat, and you'll hear her hear it, feel your heart beating. Your mum will clear her throat and say nothing, wait for you to say, "The flights are so booked up, and my boss..." But the excuses you've rehearsed so persuasively in your head die away on your lips. You'll picture her, standing in the middle of the drafty hallway wearing her padded body warmer and scarf, because even with the central heating on full blast, she feels the cold too much these days, holding her mobile in its bright pink shellac case. The vacuum, or the laundry, or whatever it was she was doing when you phoned, abandoned at her feet. "Mum," you'll say, and she'll say, "Ugh, it's all right. I understand." And so you will end the call by saying, "I'll get on the website now." And you'll hang up the phone and curse your mother and curse yourself, and you'll end up in the departures lounge on the 23rd of December, as always, waiting for an interminably delayed, allegedly budget airline to announce the flight is boarding for Belfast. The Belfast flight is always shunted to a far corner of the airport, a hangover from when its passengers needed to be corralled, observed. It is an exile's flight. There may be a handful of English or half-English kids visiting their Northern Irish parents' folks for Christmas, but the majority are those who have left for good, all travelling back at the last possible minute. Most guilty, some maudlin, few happy. You will have been delayed for almost 3 hours by the time the harassed-looking ground staff, in their cheap tunics and flashing Santa hats, will hand out vouchers for food and drinks. You'll have laid your book aside a while ago, and you will have been studying faces, listening. It's strange how quickly your ear tunes back in, how suddenly it's the ground staff's English voices that sound too loud and brash, so sure of themselves, and yet so out of place. You've lost your accent, years ago, and mostly on purpose. But when you accept the vouchers, you'll hear the vowels tightening, the inflections in your voice creeping back. One of you, one of us, one of them. There's only one bar at this departure gate, and it is always rammed. Sweaty, disgruntled passengers with too much hand luggage sinking pints and tipping back large glasses of wine. When you make it to the front, you'll find yourself shoved up against the young Indian man. You noticed him earlier, standing by the window out onto the runway, tall and silent, not moving, just staring out at the lights of the planes on the wet tarmac, looking like he's in a different world entirely. "Sorry," you'll say as you lurch into him. And he'll smile at you and say, in as broad a Belfast accent as any, "No worries, you're grand." In an instant, he'll see that you are taken aback at his accent, and you'll see him see it, and he'll smile again, a smaller, tighter smile this time. "Excuse me," the barman is saying to him. "Excuse me, sir. Pint of Guinness, please," he'll say. From the beleaguered expression on the barman's face, it's the 100th time the poor man's had to explain that vouchers are not redeemable against alcohol. "In that case, what can we get?" you'll hear yourself pipe up, a bit cheekily, overcompensating for the moment when you inadvertently betrayed yourself. You and them, us. The Belfast man will look at you, surprised, and then he'll grin. And the two of you will smile at each other as the barman lists the soft drinks available and finishes off with a litany of salt and vinegar, cheese and onion, or ready salted crisps, KP nuts, or bacon-flavoured scampi bites. "Bacon-flavoured scampi bites!" the Belfast man will shout in mock incredulity. I've nodded those since I was a child. Give us this much bacon-flavoured scampi bites. And he'll reach for your vouchers and thrust them, together with his, at the barman, who is not amused, and you will burst out laughing. The slight acquaintance forged, he will offer to buy you a drink. Say yes. Don't even say yes, just don't say no. Hesitate. That will be enough. By the curved brass railings at the edge of the bar area, you and Nirupam, that's his name, Nirupam Chowdhury, will clink your glasses and start the customary dance of Who Have We in Common? It will turn out that he grew up only a few streets away from you, in one of the big houses on Cypress Avenue, and that you even attended, briefly, the same primary school. You'll work out that he was 3 years above you, and you'll find yourself blurting out, "You don't remember my sister. Janie," you will say. "Her name was Janie." He'll start to shake his head, then stop, realize that you used the past tense, and he'll say, "Not the Jane who died in P6. And then it'll be his turn to say, "I'm sorry." And you'll say, like you always do, "It's all right." And then you'll say, "I was only 6 when Janie died. I don't even remember her myself. Not really." He'll look away then and say, "My dad and baby sister died in a car accident the following year." And you'll realise with a start that this too sounds vaguely familiar. "He was a surgeon," Nirupam will say, "at the Royal Victoria. And after he died, I used to hope my mum would move away, that we'd move back to England. But she never would." He'll finish his pint and say, "I did. I did as soon as I could." "Me too," you'll say. And then you'll hear yourself saying, "I don't even remember anything about Janie. Not really. Anything I do remember comes from photos. Photos and my parents' stories. There's nothing of my own." "She gave me her packet of crisps once," he'll say. "I've never forgotten that." His eyes will light up at the memory. "No one wanted to sit beside me or talk to me in the playground, but she did, and she shared her packet of crisps." You'll get a round in, and the two of you will stay talking until the flight, over 4 hours late by this time, is finally called, and in the scrum of boarding, you'll manage to sit together, and you'll carry on talking all the way to Belfast, and all the time you wait at the luggage carousel, and all the way to the exit. When you walk down the shabby carpet whose "Welcome to Belfast" messages, woven in 4 or 5 languages, have always seemed tired and grudging or ironic, Nirupam will proclaim in a ridiculous accent, "Willkommen an Belfast!" And it will seem as if there's never been a better joke, and the two of you will laugh until you find yourself crying. "Here," he'll say, and he'll touch your arm. "It's okay." "I know," you'll say, blowing your nose. "I'm sorry. Look at the state of me. It's just, you know." "I know," he'll say. This is what you will have talked about. You will have told him how you've always felt lonely. You will have told him how they explained in Sunday school that those we'd lost watch over us, and how it was meant to comfort but instead terrified you. The thought of Janie at your shoulder, following your every move, knowing your every thought. You will have told him that for a long time you weren't sure where she finished and you began. You only started liking books because of Janie. She had hundreds of books because she'd spent so long ill in bed with nothing to do but read, and you inherited them all. And first you read out of guilt, and then you read out of loneliness, and then you read because it had become a habit. Now you're an editorial assistant at a small publishing house, and you know your parents wonder, although they'd never say it, if that's what Janie would have done. He will have told you how he too tried to make up to his mother for the loss of his father and sister. His father, the top surgeon, his sister who hadn't the chance to be or to do anything, and so to his mother was everything. He couldn't do it. Dropped out of medical school in his 3rd year, took almost a year before plucking up the courage to tell his mother he'd done so. He's a sports journalist now, and she's too proud of him. Clips out his newspaper articles and pastes them into a scrapbook, buys multiple copies to show her friends so the originals don't get dog-eared. He will have told you, too, a little bashfully, about the book he's writing in his spare time, a book about a young boy from Delhi growing up in Belfast who rides his bike along Cypress Avenue. All of a sudden, you will have remembered a time when they thought Janie was better, and your parents bought the two of you new bicycles, and you rode them all afternoon and into the dusk, and you watched your big sister race ahead of you, swerving in and out of view between the trees on Cypress Avenue. You will realise then that you haven't forgotten entirely, that she's still there, inside of you, this something of her that's yours and yours only. And now that Neeropam's brought it back, no one can ever take the memory away. And you know how to remember her. And that's why you'll be laughing and crying at the silly, shabby carpet, too. On the spur of the moment, as you're walking through the sliding glass door of the arrivals hall into the frosty night, you will invite Neeropam Chowdhury and his mother over to your parents' house for mulled wine the following day, Christmas Eve. As soon as you've said it, you will wonder if you've made a mistake, and what your parents will say, or whether or not Neeropam and his mother will even come. But when you say to your parents that you've invited them, it will turn out that your mum remembers Anjali Chowdhury. They used to go to the same mothers and toddlers in the church hall of Bloomfield Presbyterian. "Imagine," she'll say, her eyes brighter than you've seen them in years. "Imagine. When our Janie and he were toddlers together." On Christmas Eve, your father will light a fire in the living room and the five of you will sit around it drinking mulled wine and eating the mince pies that Mrs. Chowdhury baked herself. You'll talk about Janie, of course, and Mr. Chowdhury and Nisha. But you'll talk of other things too, of London and books and the way Belfast's changing. You'll feel sheepish when the conversation turns to Belfast. Neeropam is more dutiful than you and comes back often. You come back to Belfast once a year, for Christmas and Boxing Day, Janie's Day, in one fell swoop, then back to London again on the 27th. But now, for the first time ever, you'll allow yourself to think that maybe you'll come back again in a few months' time, when the days are beginning to lengthen. You'll walk down Cypress Avenue and all the streets you used to play on, Sanford Avenue and Sunbury Avenue, and maybe you'll walk on. Walk the length of the Upper Newtonards Road and the Albert Bridge Road and pause on the Albert Bridge itself, unlovely as it is. The traffic, the down-at-heel leisure centre, the railway station. To watch the starlings that mass and swoop above the east of the city in the evenings. You'll catch Neeropam's eye then, as if he's been reading your mind. Christmas will be quiet, as always. But it will be a calm sort of quiet this year, and for once you won't feel ridiculous, the three of you sitting in the cold dining room, wearing paper hats, while your father carves the turkey, and your mother doles out the vegetables, and you chatter in bursts about silly, inconsequential things.
Well, I'm caught one more time up on Cypress Avenue.
Cypress Avenue was written by Lucy Caldwell and read by Laura Piper. The producer was Heather Larmer. After the news, last word. And then, are there really 26,911 words of EU regulation on the sale of cabbage? Tim Harford investigates in More or Less at 4:30.
Pure Drama on BBC One.
20 years ago, a man died in police custody.
And we have been prevented from getting to the truth of how he died.
She's in line to become the country's next top lawyer, but her husband is living a lie.
You've forgotten that I'm married to the woman I spy on.
To love, honour and betray.
You're asking me to put this before my family.
I'm trying to protect your family. Do you want them to know who you really are?
Undercover.
Is it true? Is it true?
Starts on Sunday night at 9 on BBC One.
BBC News at 4 o'clock. A delivery driver from Luton has been found guilty of plotting to kill an American airman outside a base in East Anglia. Junaid Khan was also convicted of preparing to travel to Syria to join the Islamic State militant group. He'd discussed staging a car crash outside RAF Lakenheath and attacking a serviceman with a knife. The business secretary, Sajid Javid, has been visiting the Port Talbot steel plant, which is at risk after its owners, Tata, said they wanted to sell their British assets. The Indian firm employs 4,000 people there, but is losing £1 million a day. Mr. Javid has been criticised by unions for his handling of the crisis, threatening the British steel industry. The United Nations Refugee Agency has called for Greece and Turkey to improve conditions for refugees before a deal on the return of migrants comes into force next month. There's been fighting in camps on the Greek islands. From Lesbos, Sarah Rainsford reports.
The UN Refugee Agency says detention should only be a last resort for asylum seekers. But every migrant who arrives here by boat is now taken to a closed camp. That includes women, children and the elderly. And here on Lesbos, the facility that's used is now overcrowded. Those inside say some people have to sleep in the open, and the UNHCR says food supplies are insufficient. And frustration is clearly mounting, as families, including those fleeing the violence in Syria and Iraq, now worry they'll be sent back to Turkey.
A woman from Northern Ireland has been released from prison in Peru after serving 2 years for drugs offences. Michaela McCollum was arrested in 2013 along with a friend after being caught trying to smuggle cocaine worth £1.5 million out of the country. A judge has ruled that a Sudanese refugee who walked to the UK through the Channel Tunnel can be prosecuted for obstructing a train. Abdul Haroon was granted asylum last year, raising questions about whether he could be charged over the way he reached Britain. His trial has been scheduled for June. BBC News.
Now on Radio 4, Last Word with Matthew Bannister.
On Last Word this week, the comedians Ronnie Corbett and Gary Shandling. Also the former head of the Israeli Secret Service Mossad, General Meir Dagan, and the Somerset gardener Joan Lorraine. But first, Dame Zaha Hadid was one of the leading architects of her generation. Known by some as the Queen of the Curve, she designed groundbreaking buildings which were sometimes controversial but always innovative. Her practice produced exciting theoretical works before the successful completion of the Vitra fire station in Germany brought her to international attention. In the 1990s, her design for the Cardiff Opera House was scrapped, and her first major UK building was the Riverside Museum of Transport in Glasgow in 2011. Then came her iconic contribution to the London Olympic Games. The architecture critic Jonathan Glancy visited the site as it was under construction.
This is the Aquatic Centre, the building that serves as the gateway to the London 2012 Olympics. The scaffolding's disappearing now, and you can see the great undulating